This isn't the first time I've been to Adra. It's a dormitory town on the edge of Damascus. I was here last year when it was the centre for a lot of the relief operation. There wasn't damage then, but then last December this place was taken over by armed rebels, led by the Nusra Front, that's the Al-Qaeda affiliate. And then just in the last 6 weeks or so, they've been driven out by the army. And there was a battle here, you can see. Heaps of rubble, wrecked apartments, burnt out buildings. The war has taken a savage toll of this place.
How are you, sir?
Hey, how are you?
I'm fine.
Good to see you.
Okay.
What's your name?
Muhammad.
Just going down by torchlight into the basement where Mohammed and the other residents of this building and his family were kept by the rebel fighters. There is a small washroom at the edge of the basement which they used with the 60 other people who were here. It's pretty foul, quite frankly.
In the mornings, 25 children all wanted to use the toilet at once. Imagine that. There was no way in or out at all. There was a lot of investigation and torture, asking questions like, who was in the security forces? They took those who were affiliated to the army or the police. I had to lie and told them I worked in Damascus in a shoe store.
Mohammed told me that the men interrogating him were Syrians from a less extreme group than Nusra. But he said the ones in charge were foreigners, including a masked man who sounded as if he came from Morocco or Tunisia. Mohammed said the people in his basement constantly feared murder or rape.
A one-year-old child aged 1,000 years. That's how those 22 days were. During these last 3 or 4 years, we've been taken back to the dinosaur era. I actually think dinosaurs are more civilized than the rebels are.
But at least Mohammed is back home, even though it's badly damaged. No one is returning yet in Kaboun, a suburb of Damascus. The front line between the rebels and the army splits Kaboun in two. I went there with the Syrian army, about 10 metres from rebel positions. We're going now through another warren of passages, not between the buildings. Through another low hole in the side of a wall. It's hard to move with your flak jacket. More collapsed roofs, burnt out rooms. There's been a fire in this room, I can still smell it. Early in the war, opponents of President Assad hoped that the collapse of the Syrian army would make their victory inevitable. But the Syrian army's still fighting. Morale seems high. An hour or so before we visited the soldiers, 15 schoolboys were killed when their playground on the rebel side was shelled. The boys, dead, dying, and badly hurt, were rushed to a small dressing station. A teacher who just sent the boys out for their break saw them die. We've revoiced her words to protect her identity.
4 students in my class died. 2 of them were 11 years old, but couldn't even write their names. I would often shout at them. Just before the attack, I had sent them out of the classroom for being naughty. They missed 4 years of education because of this war. Now my students are buried side by side. No one will shout at them anymore because they can't read or write.
Human rights groups, whose figures are rejected by the regime, say the Syrian armed forces are killing many more civilians than any of the rebels, including the jihadist group that calls itself Islamic State. The army says it knew nothing about the attack. The teacher is skeptical.
It's the president's responsibility to keep children out of this war. It's okay for him to fight the terrorists, but what have children done to deserve this? They don't have weapons. He needs to stop shelling the schools. But both sides need to stop attacking the children.
Diplomacy has failed to stop the war. No side has been able to win it. The war's changing, pulling in more countries. But the end is nowhere near being in sight.